Hello and welcome to another episode of In the Margins. My name's Eli and here with me today is Jack. Jack is a second year BBA student with a minor in film studies who runs the WLU No Show. That's WLUNOSHOW on Instagram. And he spends his free time making films to build his brand. Truly a jack of all trades. And yes, I think I'm funny. So how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Did you like my joke?
I did, yes.
Very well done. I was like, he's probably heard it before. You probably heard it so many times.
Yes.
I couldn't help myself. Have you actually ever been interviewed before for another podcast?
I have not. No, this is very exciting.
Oh, first time then. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm an anomaly among the other podcasters. Everyone else like outsources guests and stuff. And I'm just like, all right, everyone in Radio Laurier, be prepared to be interviewed. So you're a filmmaker and you have a minor in film.
Yes.
Why did you go into filmmaking?
Yeah, well, by the time I kind of realized that I wanted to go into it, I had already been accepted into BBA here. And I had already accepted my offer. So I was kind of, I don't want to just totally 180. And I've been kind of thinking about it. I love the YouTube filmmakers, Casey Neistat, Matt DiVella, Sarah Dici, all of them. And it really kind of clicked when in quarantine, we first thought it was going to be just two extra weeks of March break. Mm-hmm. I realized I could take that time and rewatch all the Marvel movies because I'm a huge MCU fan.
Oh, nice.
I remember watching them and just being that'd be so cool to do, make movies and be in movies. And I was like, okay, this is it. Yeah.
That's so awesome. And just to go totally off the rails of this question here. Did you see Into the Spider-Verse?
Yes, I did.
I love that movie. I'm not a huge fan of Marvel movies, but I loved that movie to pieces. The animation, the colors, the cinematography, the music, it was all amazing.
Yes, so well done.
Did you get anything out of that movie? Did you learn any cool tricks in there?
Yeah, it was definitely it's very it's one of those movies where it's just so detailed. And they really you can see how they just planned so many Easter eggs and hidden stuff into it. It's a great film to watch and be that's how you add detail into movies and really get a style going.
100%. And I'm going to say spoilers right now. If to anyone who's listening who hasn't watched it, you should watch it. Mm-hmm. But I really loved how, I really liked how they made the uncle the villain. It was awful. It made me sad. But I think it was really an interesting choice to do that when his dad is the one who's enforcing laws and stuff. And and this guy is his hero and he's looking up to him. And then all of a sudden he's the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really cool way to take the normal Spider-Man story of losing his uncle and just totally flip it. Cause it's his uncle was.
Oh, right. Uncle Ben. That's a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. And so I guess in the comics, the Miles Morales comics, it's the same way where his uncle is the bad guy. And it's just such a cool way to spin it.
100%. And I really liked, his relationship with his parents too. I thought that it was very sweet. I like that they had a nice little bond going. Cause obviously when you're a teenager, you'd feel you're you don't get me, mom.
Yeah.
But the dad's Miles, love you. Makes him say back. That's such a parent thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So going back to, films, end of spoilers. Is there any kind of film genre you think you could see yourself doing more than another?
I don't know. I love sci-fi and stuff like that. And I guess that goes into the Marvel movies too. Just whole, like, I guess fiction, but I also love nonfiction stuff. It's hard to, like, narrow it down to one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love, like, new sci-fi and, like, what they're doing with it and how they're kind of incorporating, like, 50s sci-fi radio plays and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so, so cool. And, of course, like, Marvel movies. Like, I love, like, all, like you'll talk to filmmakers and they'll be like, I want to hit, like, Tarantino level. And I'm like, if I could, like, direct a Marvel movie, that would be, like, the peak of my career. 100%.
Hell yeah.
I'm such a huge fan. It'd be so cool to, like, work within that universe.
That would be really cool. And especially if you could get to, I guess, wiggle things around a little and, like, see. I know that you wouldn't be the writer necessarily, but being able to direct that would be really, really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had a question, and I think I forgot it. No. Okay. Did you ever watch the original Doctor Who or, like, the original Star Treks?
Oh, I actually, so it's funny with Doctor Who, I did not watch the, like, classic Who, but I love, like, the modern Doctor Who. I'm a huge fan of Doctor Who, from, like, Christopher Eccleston on to, like, I kind of stopped with Jodie Whittaker, the newest Doctor, just because the writing wasn't that good. She's such an amazing Doctor, and she brings so, like, so much to the role. She's fantastic. She just got... It was just, like, the writing that messed her up. And I was kind of like, it's not really interesting anymore. But I watched some classic Trek. I definitely... My dad is a big fan of classic Trek.
Oh, same with mine. He just watches it over and over.
Yeah, but I think I was never, like, sat down and watched it. It was more like if it was on TV, I might catch it a bit. And I also love, like, Next Gen is really cool. I got to meet... Riker at a convention once, and that was really neat. And a little bit of, like, Voyager, but yeah, I guess, like, a little bit of old sci-fi. But I loved, like, reading old sci-fi, like old 50s sci-fi, and, like, the radio plays too are very, very cool.
I was wondering, because I wanted to know your thoughts on their I guess you could say cinematic choices, because for anyone who doesn't watch Star Trek or hasn't seen the older versions, sometimes when they're in a ship in space, they're having a battle, and in the older versions they didn't have all the CGI that we have, so instead of, you know, making it look like the ship was shaking or whatever, making the room actually tilt, they just had everyone throw themselves onto the floor.
I know that. Yeah, they like shake the camera.
Yeah, they like
gonna drop down.
That's my favorite, when they like fall in the opposite direction, the camera's shaking, or they're like all falling in different directions. Or in Doctor Who, they had like they would just have people dress up in like weird costumes, or like have like feather boas doing things.
Yes. Oh my god, like the old Doctor Who costumes are
hilarious. Yeah,
and just like old sci-fi battles are so funny to watch, and people will point out too, there's a lot of great like memes about it where like when two ships meet in space, the odds that they're gonna be like perfectly upright with each other is so small. There's some great like people will make animations of two ships at like 90 degree angles just like meeting in space.
Actually, that's I never even thought of that, but then wouldn't it be so funny if you like, you're like ship approaching and you're like trying to dock, but like they're like, okay, you need to turn upright, and they're like, what? And they go the opposite direction.
Yeah, exactly.
It's really cool to think about how creative you had to get, because I feel like now you can get like you're still being creative, but like back then you had to work with a lot of limitations, and the way people worked around that was really funny and really cool, even if people thought it was scary back then.
Yeah, and it set a lot like great precedents too for like people who don't have like Disney resources today, how they can like go back and use those old methods, and like it's, you can choose it as an aesthetic. If you can't achieve like high quality sharp fake sci-fi, you can be like, I can make it look like it's supposed to be like 50s sci-fi.
Yeah, and it can also I guess it could show you that it doesn't have to be like $5 billion budget in order to be like universally beloved.
Yeah.
So is that something that you like about filmmaking, like the variety of things that you can do?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very, very broad, where you can like, you can kind of fit within a model. And like in film classes, that's really what you kind of cover, is like the different models and like movements in film. And you can take a film and like place it like within something. But you can really just do whatever. And you can just take films and just totally spin it around and just try different things. It's a very like malleable medium, really.
What kinds of models are there? I don't know anything about filmmaking.
Oh yeah, it's funny because I was the same way. And Laurier's filmmaking course is very like theoretical. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's like I know someone who I was in someone's short film who goes to York, and that is more like you're making films. Mm-hmm. But with that, like, there is like different like there's different like pathways you can go through. Like I'm going through like the film production option, so I will do like video editing and sound stuff and like that. But yeah, you learn about like the main one is like classical Hollywood cinema. And right. That's very like, that's like the classic, like Singing in the Rain, all that, like you have these characters, something happens and it gets resolved. That's that. And then like the film course that I'm in now is film history from the 1950s. And we go through this last week, it was new Iranian cinema. And then before that, we did like fifth generation Chinese cinema. And that was
really interesting.
Yeah. And that was where when they reopened the kind of film universities after like the fall of Chairman Mao, that like the students who graduated from that, they're called like fifth generation. And so you'll see like in like the political context, you see different like movements happen, like the post World War II German cinema movement. So it's really neat to kind of look at that and see different consistencies and how different things are reflected in different movies.
Would you say that I guess social issues and cultural issues that are happening currently are always reflected in film?
I'd say so. Yeah, definitely. I think it's impossible to make a film where like that's not influenced by the world that you made it in.
Yeah,
because I think that like it's impossible as a person to not be influenced by that stuff. Like you see in the news and your parents and all that. And it's just like, it's literally just impossible to not be influenced by what's happening in the world. And that's where like people will take like an old film and they'll be like, whoa, this predicted how the world was going to be today. And then other people come in and they go, well, no, it was a reflection of what the world was at that time. So of course it was true. It's very like everything kind of reflects where it was made, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I think I can kind of apply that to my mediums of choice, which is mostly writing. Like you can't really put a person, like anything you write, you're so influenced by your own culture or whatever is happening. You're gonna, it's inevitable. You're a human being. Yeah. You're gonna put yourself into that work.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think the only way you could get away from that even a little bit would be to have multiple, like a lot of different people writing, like when you get like big projects. I can't think of a movie example, but a game example would be Persona 5. They all have very different characters from very different backgrounds. So I think that would be the one way you could get away from it, but there's still going to be social issues in there.
Yeah.
So do you have any current projects happening with film?
Honestly, not really too much. I kind of have funny barriers right now where the laptop that I have cannot edit. Premiere Pro has like upgraded to a point that my laptop can't edit. And like DaVinci Resolve, another program, doesn't take the kind of file that my camera spits out.
So I'm kind of
in a funny, like, but I've got like a PC build planned. And so I'm in the next, like sometime before next September, I'm going to really get working on that and have like an editing beast that I can use to churn out films. But in the meantime, it's really just like thinking about ideas, writing some stuff. Every once in a while, I'll kind of write down an idea that I have and try to flesh out some sort of screenplay or even and I think that like doing like podcast stuff is a real way to kind of get, like, a good like creative outlet, and really just kind of thinking about stuff and watching movies and going through my film courses and really just like getting like a solid base set up.
Yeah, I think it's really funny when you have like devices that they work perfectly fine, but then they just won't update anymore, and it's like, oh shit. Yeah. I had a thought. I promise you I had a question, and then as soon as I want to ask it, it disappears. I wanted to ask you, so you do podcasting and filmmaking, so you're also a BBA student, and you're doing, I assume, full-time classes, and you're doing part-time work with Radio Laurie. So how do podcasting and filmmaking look for you as a hobby? Like, how do you work around being busy?
Yeah, it's definitely pretty tricky. And I think with filmmaking, I really kind of got into it last year when I was at home doing schools. It was a lot easier. And then over the summer, also, like, I do work almost full time in the summer, so it's a bit tricky, but I'm able to kind of fit just making films for fun around that. But with school is where, yeah, it really gets tricky. And there's also like a few other clubs that I'm involved in. So for like the podcasting, that one's not too bad, because usually there's such like little editing that goes into my show. I can just kind of record it and then 10 minutes later have it sent off to be posted.
Nice.
And so I'm jealous. Usually yeah, so that'll take me about like an hour and a half, and that's not too bad. And then I have some classes that I'm usually able to just kind of get like the outline of my show figured out during that class, and then I just reach out to some people, see what's up. And then, yeah, that one's not too bad. The filmmaking, I think, definitely will end up taking up more of my time when I'm able to really get into that. But I like doing just the little kind of like vlog style, almost just like me with a camera going around trying to find a story out of it. And so that definitely makes it a bit easier. It's like I'm able to just kind of work it around my schedule and then also edit around my schedule too.
True. I know. I'm really jealous because my podcast, I always end up, I record it, then I listen through to it, and I do, I add in the music, and I cut out some like long pauses or extra stuff that guests don't want to be in there. So it probably takes me like hour to 2 hours before I can send it off. But I'm getting work, experience working with audio though. So I guess it's worth it.
Yeah.
I'm curious, so what made you want to make a podcast?
Yeah, I remember like seeing there's some Instagram account, and it just posts like first year opportunities at Laurier. And I was a bit kind of worried, being an off-campus student who lived like 2 hours away from Waterloo, that I would have a hard time getting involved in stuff. And they posted that Radio Laurie was looking for volunteers for like assistance and stuff like that. And they mentioned, they were like, you can also pitch a show. And so a lot of the podcasts I listen to are just people having just like a dumb, funny conversation for an hour. And so I was like, I wonder if I could pitch that. And
get I could do that.
Exactly. And I did it. It got approved pretty fast. And so I just kind of started recording and getting my different Laurie friends to come on, and I kind of got like a structure out of it, and it really, I just kind of continued on from there, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. I know when I was pitching, I pitched a audio drama. The only reason I didn't go through with it was because, well, I had two reasons. One, I didn't want it to be owned by Radio Laurie if I wanted to continue. Yeah, true. And then I also had to find a cast. That would be hard. Especially when you don't know anyone at Laurier. It's like, hey, random stranger, you have a nice voice, you want to act? Yeah, I think it's funny because I think a lot of people who came across Radio Laurier did something similar to you, where they just like, oh, hey, I can do that. I have a microphone. Mm-hmm. I can do this.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Do you think part of the appeal of podcasting is how easy it is to get into it?
I think definitely, yeah. You see, like, we see now this weird, like, wave of podcasts happening. Of random people just kind of saying, I should do a podcast, and then starting a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it is, like, insanely easy. It's, like, you even don't need, like, a mic. Like, your laptop, odds are, has a mic that works. Mm-hmm. And so you literally just sit, record for an hour, talk about whatever you want, and then post it. And kind of the struggle is making it interesting. Like, if you have like a parent company sort of like Radio Laurier, it's easy because they just kind of churn it out and they post it. You don't really have to worry about it really capturing a huge audience to continue. But if it's just you trying to make it and you're actually trying to break into the industry, then it becomes a lot more like you have to really promote it and mm-hmm. really do a lot to keep it running.
Yeah, I've looked into being a professional podcaster. It's very hard, as is mm-hmm. most things in the arts, unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... I've noticed the promotion part is really difficult because depending on what you promote, you may not want it attached to your actual, like, I guess your regular name. You might want a pseudonym, but mm-hmm. at the same time, the best way to spread information is through your friends and family, right?
Yeah.
So it's definitely a catch-22 there.
Yeah.
Do you do any promotion for your podcast?
A little bit, yeah. I kind of shared around on my personal socials. Mm-hmm. And I have, like, my, like, show social media that I use to post it and share it around. And apart from that, I think that, like, word of mouth is a really good way. And that kind of goes in with both, like, I have friends who listen to it and, like, just getting more and more different guests on the show. Mm-hmm. It really definitely spreads that way, because then they're like, hey, like, I was on this show, you guys should listen to it. And then that really helps it travel. And I definitely don't have like a huge audience, but I do have like people who tell me that they listen to it. It's really fun just having friends who are like, dude, your show's a lot of fun to listen to. And I'm like, oh, that's so nice, thank you.
Oh, yay. Yeah, it's really cool. And it's both terrifying and kind of cool when someone's like, hey, I listened to your show. And you're like, oh, my God, what?
Exactly.
Do you have an end goal as a podcaster? Like, do you have anything you want to do with this podcast? Are you planning on continuing it through the university or beyond?
Yeah, I definitely like want to kind of keep it going to when I graduate. Maybe even after, if I end up like working somehow at Laurier, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. if I take an extra year, take a couple extra classes and do something at Radio Laurier, maybe still. Yeah, just kind of like keep it going till I leave. I want to hit at least 100 episodes by the time it's over. And I think that's totally doable. I ended last year at like 23 episodes.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, I think like 3 more years of it, I think I should be able to hit 100 or a little over.
Wow, that's crazy. I think last year I had 14 episodes. So this year I'll have 28. So you're like going at double the rate I am. That's insane. Do you release weekly then?
Yeah. Yeah, we just had every Wednesday it streams, and then I post it after to Spotify. This last Wednesday, which was the 17th, was the 30th episode.
Wow, congrats.
Well, yeah.
What made you want to post to Spotify?
I think it was more of like to have somewhere that people could find it kind of on its own. Like, if you go to like the Radio Laurier site, you can go back and see like all the episodes it streamed. But I wanted more of like, if someone wanted to catch up and like listen to all of it, they could just find it all in one place. So that's kind of what I do. And people will ask me I've had people say to me like, hey, like, I want to listen to it, but I can't catch a stream. Where can I catch it after? And I'll say on the website or on Spotify. So yeah, it's nice to have just like a spot that you can find it all and just take it in.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing that as well, but I found out you have to have Spotify. You have to pay for it, I think, right? You have to have a paid account?
I don't know. I have like a family account. Like my dad handles all that, so it's very possible. Yeah. I go through Anchor, if that helps.
Oh, I see. That's good to know. I think it's interesting. I believe the amount of podcasts on Radio Laurier has dropped significantly from last year.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened. Maybe a bunch of people graduated. Because I think, let's see here. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So there's only, there's 15. So that's a decent amount. I just feel like there was more last year.
I do think so. Yeah. I think it probably, yeah, there was quite a few people that graduated, like quite a few of the manager roles are like first time managers. And yeah, I do think it was just moving into like more back into in-person.
Yeah.
There was like more opportunities for creative stuff. And when last year it was mostly just like stuff that you could do totally remotely.
Yes.
But now it's like you can actually do stuff in person and do different creative things. And it's a lot more open now than it was.
Yeah, I agree with you. That is probably the reason why, because now that everything's opening up, you can go back and like paint or what are the things people do? Dance? I don't know what's available on the Laurier campus. Proving the point there. So does your family know about your podcasting and film stuff?
Yeah, quite a bit. Yeah, my family, they definitely know a lot more about podcasting. My film, I'm kind of like
more personal. You know,
it's kind of like embarrassing, like making like an art thing and then being like, hey, here's this like art thing that I made. So it's definitely more something that I'm just trying to get off the ground a little bit first.
Yeah, I can relate, because my goal, I want to publish some audio dramas, and I have like the second draft of an audio drama, and I know that if I want to get it out there, I'll have to promote it. The idea of my parents listening to that is just I don't even know how to describe it. It's like, it's not a shame, I guess. It's just, I don't know. It's just a weird feeling. It's both fear and like, it's kind of like if your parents read your diary, I guess. It shows too much of you. I guess it's kind of on the same level of like doing a talent show to the entire school versus doing a talent show for like one person.
Yeah, exactly.
It's that kind of vibe. Does anyone in your family like not approve of what you're doing or think that you should spend your time doing other things?
I don't think so. I think it's like, I think I have quite a stereotypical family as far as like extended family members go, you know, where they're kind of like, you're a business student, do business stuff. And I'm like, I don't like business stuff. And so, you know, it's that kind of like, I don't know if they really see the value in it, but I don't really care, to be honest. I'm more of like, I like doing it and my friends like it. And so I'm all set.
Well, if you like it, that's all you need to have.
Yeah.
Would you say that your cultural your cultural background has influenced you at all?
I'd say probably kind of in like what we were saying earlier about, I think, yeah, like everyone's influenced by kind of their culture and what's around them. I find that I don't really have much of like a cultural identity, not in a bad way, more of just like, you know, I'm not part of like, you know, like I'm a white man. I'm not part of like an oppressed group where culture is very important and it's very much like held on to and emphasized. I'm more of just kind of like existing. But I do think that within that, there's probably definitely some influence that I've seen and kind of reflected in stuff that I've made.
Yeah, more like of a general, I'm assuming you're secular-ish?
Sorry, could you define secular?
Oh, like, are you Jewish? Are you Christian? Are you atheist?
Oh, I'm an atheist.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. So yeah, being an atheist and then, like, it's kind of a weird spot to be in, when you don't have religious connection in Canada. But I feel like since my family in the past has been Christian, we celebrate a lot of Christian holidays, but without the religious part, it's kind of a weird spot to be in.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Do you think your self-confidence has affected any of your art?
Ooh, I think definitely. Yeah. It wasn't really until I started like university that I really became self-confident. I was very like I'm an entirely different person to who I was in high school. I really did not have a good time in high school. I just did not like it. I was very like shy, and I really struggled with like anxiety, but I found like a really solid friend group in high school, and I found my current girlfriend in that friend group, and she's nice. She's awesome. And yeah, I just kind of like the summer after grade 12, I went through a pretty nasty breakup.
Oh no.
That really just like tilted my personality in a good way, because I felt like in that relationship, and before that in that friendship with that person, I felt like I was really being held back. And then I kind of got her out of my life, and then I was like, oh, I'm actually a pretty cool person. And now I really feel like I'm myself, and I really feel great about that. And I think that if I didn't have the self-confidence that I have now, I would not be making films. I think I would just be a business student looking forward to a desk job life.
Doing and now I'm like business things.
Exactly. Yeah. And now I'm like, no, I want to make movies and do fun stuff.
I don't even know what a business students even do once they're done. I've never been entirely sure on that.
Yeah, I don't think any business student really knows what business people do. I hear different job titles and I'm like, I don't know what that is.
I feel like I feel like languages students, visual arts students, and business students all are like the handshake emoji when it's like, what are we doing once we get out of here?
Exactly. Yeah. 100%.
Because I think I have a couple friends who are in BBA, and when I talk to them, like, what do you even do with that? Like, you just go, hi, I do business. Like, what does that mean? What can you do with that? But also, I guess you can say, hey, I do languages. Okay, what do you do with that?
Yeah, I hear like a million different job titles, and I'm just like, I don't know what any of that means.
Yeah, that's a mood. I feel like that's almost just the university experience, just hearing things and be like, I don't know what that means. Yes. Moving on.
Exactly.
Do you think there's kind of a hierarchy when it comes to different forms of art, maybe specifically film or podcasting? Is there any like style of one of those that feels more highbrow or more socially acceptable than the other?
I think 100%. I think that's everywhere in art. I think every medium of art you'll see just like so much like pretentiousness and like especially in film, and I hate it so much. And it's so funny because like you'll see with like there's a weird thing in art that you'll see where like people see just like horrible people and they are just like worshipped.
Yeah.
And I come in and I'm like, what is going on? Like you'll see like a whole thing of people will be like, this director treated his cast horribly on set, and everyone's like, that's so innovative, wow. And
I'm like, God.
What? And it's just, yeah, you see, and I really just try to push against it, where like I haven't seen a single Tarantino movie, for example. I've seen like one Wes Anderson movie, and I like I said, like I love the MCU. I love movies that people hate and that people love to see as like stupid movies. And that goes to like every art form, where like there's, you see people who are just like very like pretentious, and that just always like annoys me, because art is really for everyone.
It is.
And when you start to put barriers on what we can like in art, you start to just like, you start to like betray the, like the core foundation of art.
That feels like a quotable thing. Like that feels like something someone would slap on the cover of a book.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Like, art should be accessible to everyone, because like that's kind of like the entire mm-hmm. point of living, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
people want to sing, they want to dance, they want to watch mm-hmm. TV or act or play games, and all that comes from art.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yes.
Also, I have no idea who Tarantino is. What did he do?
Pulp Fiction. He's known for like Pulp Fiction, Kill Bill. He's a director.
Oh, I'm aware and of Kill just, Bill.
Yeah, he just is not a good dude. Like, people, there's a scene in Pulp Fiction. He makes a cameo in Pulp Fiction. He's a white man. I should mention that mm-hmm. first. He makes a cameo in Pulp Fiction as a character. And his character in one scene says the N-word like 20 times. And like, people that know him in day-to-day life are like, yeah, he just says the N-word. It's like part of his vocabulary. And it's just, he's one of those like it's weird where like the top directors in the world are all just horrible people. And it sucks.
I would say, I know this is a common saying, but I really do think that power corrupts. Like,
mm-hmm. 100%.
Yeah. I think that once you get used to people throwing themselves at you or just mm-hmm. accepting you being rude to them or cruel to them, like, and nobody does anything about it, mm-hmm. There's no consequences for you anymore. So it's like,
yeah,
mm-hmm. I would like to think that if I became rich or famous, that I wouldn't be like that.
Same. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that people would call me out on that. I also heard, going back to your one comment about horrible filming conditions, mm-hmm. I heard of this one story where, I don't remember what it was. I think they didn't tell an actor something. Oh, they didn't tell. Yeah, they didn't tell. I think this guy was Snape. They didn't tell him they were going to like pull the ground off beneath him.
Yes, it was when he was in Die Hard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an example of, yeah, they'll do stuff like that a little more extreme.
Mm-hmm.
They'll do like, they'll scare. There was something where like a director pointed a gun
at
an actor in a scene to get a real fear emotion. And it was like, and then everyone's like, that's so artistic. It's like, no, that's stupid. Yeah. Or yeah, they'll do that. And it's just so bad.
Things like that going. Are awful. Mm-hmm. And there can always be an accident. And if it's not prepared beforehand, mm-hmm. it's emotionally and physically cruel to an actor, and you're just a dick for doing mm-hmm. it. And
yeah.
B, there's, for example, a while back, a couple of weeks ago, there was supposedly a prop that was not handled correctly on a set. And
yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it was a gun, and they thought mm-hmm. it wasn't loaded, but it was loaded, and someone shot and killed an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, there should always, always, always be proper precautions, even if you think there's 1 in 100 chance that it'll go wrong. Mm-hmm. You might be that 1 in 100 chance.
Mm-hmm. And that story too, like as time has gone on, so many just crazy details has come out about that.
Oh my God. Where
when they handed him the gun, they told him there wasn't a live round in it.
Mm-hmm.
And like the armorer told him that there wasn't a live round in it. And the armorer had literally been yelled at like the day before for mishandling a gun, and mm-hmm. there was so much like, it's very like, okay, like this accident almost makes sense that it happened because of how many different things had gone wrong on this set.
Absolutely.
And it's a great example of like negligence and really how you should avoid that.
Yeah. And I think also the poor person who, I don't remember if it was an innocent actor who wasn't related at all, I feel so bad for them. I don't remember who shot, if it was the RA or not.
It was Alec Baldwin, the actor and the producer of the mm-hmm. movie, shot a cinematographer.
Mm. Mm. Right. And as someone who, albeit not on such a great stage, like not on such a, like a big level, I was an actor. That is terrifying. Like I remember even with the props that we worked with, like, and they were all like plastic and fake and whatever, but you don't touch props that aren't yours. Even with the fake knives, you held them down and you held them like they were a real weapon. You don't screw around with the props.
Yeah, I did a couple sword fights on stage, and that is, yeah, it's a big, like, these are things that can actually hurt you, so you need to be really, really careful.
Mm-hmm. It should be, like, safety should always be your number one priority in any scene, because you never know.
Yeah, exactly.
On a slightly lighter note, I'm curious about film. So... When we see things like Marvel and those types of movies, there are sometimes, I guess, sounds that aren't necessarily recorded with the imagery. Do you know how they make it so that it's overlaid on top of each other?
Yeah, I think that you have like Foley artists who'll do that. And that's like their whole job is like you see these. The videos are very, very cool because you'll see like they just use like so many different props and how they do it. And they'll pretty much just like be in a room with all these mics and all their props and they'll just be watching it on the screen and they'll make the noises and they'll try to match it up as they can. And they'll probably do it like 10 or 20 times each scene. And then you might have something like voiceover where you're like replacing lines later on. And I know that, yeah, you can do that a few different ways. But it's usually kind of the same thing, like the actor in the recording booth, like watching this scene on a screen, and you're really just like trying to match it up the best way that you can. And there's probably quite a bit like editing that goes in with that too. And then like you'll have, like if I have to record something where my sound and my video are different things, like I'm recording on my mic, but I'm videoing myself with the camera, I'll usually do like a clap sync where like I just kind of clap and then I can match that up.
Oh, that's like, smart.
Yeah. So I see the spike and usually I find that when I have like the camera right in front of me and the mic also right in front of me, it'll match up pretty well. Like the waves will look pretty much the same where I can then just kind of chop. I can just throw it in and then I'll usually wait till they match up to delete the original audio where I can like listen to it. And if I hear a difference, I move it around and I kind of want it to sound like just one voice talking.
That is.
And then once I get that, clever. I can take it out. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty fun trying to piece it all together and make it all work.
That's really funny because when I'm editing these podcasts, sometimes I take out the long pauses, right? So I just kind of copy some background noise and I paste it and I just kind of wiggle it around till it sounds similar to the original.
Nice. Awesome.
Is there anything that people might not know about filmmaking that you find really interesting?
I don't know. It's really cool. I like to look into like effects in film. Mm-hmm. I follow this channel, Quarter Digital. And they're like, they make films and they have a secondary channel and they do like a VFX breakdown series where they will look at different movies and they'll explain like what's good about it, what's bad about it. And they just had like Adam Savage as a guest. They had Seth Rogen on and it's very, very cool to look at like what goes into making VFX and how like you can prep for it even like when filming the scene with no effects. And it's just... Yeah, that's very cool to see all that goes into that.
Yeah, that is really cool. Once again, don't know much about filmmaking. So it's really interesting to see, I guess, what goes on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of related to that, is there anything you'd like to see more of in film?
I think you can always see more like diversity. Like representation. I think that I would see this a lot in like, I used to do like, well, I still do like theater and acting in there. And you'll see a lot of like, you'll see like all white casts and all white crews.
Yes.
And it's like, there's no reason in 2021, 2022, why that should still be there.
Or you see, you'll see, like, it'll be an almost all white cast, and then there's like one character of color, and then that character color is so obviously written by a white person.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And the community theater back in my hometown, where I kind of got into acting, they would always do that. They would have like all white casts and just not great roles for people of color. And they would always be like, we don't have any people of color coming out to audition. And it's like, well, that's your fault. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so that means that your environment isn't welcoming. How can you make your environment more welcoming?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, okay, well, this show needs an all-white cast. Okay, so why is your crew all white? Also, it's very like, there's always room for people that aren't straight cis white people.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy when there's none of those people in like a cast and crew.
Yeah, it's really, on one hand, I understand areas that are more rural where there aren't that many people of color, that I can get. But when you're in an area like ours, like there's no shortage yeah. of people of color who want to be actors, who want to be directors, who want to be behind the scenes. Like if you have an all white cast, to me, that's a little weird. And I know some people are mm-hmm. like, oh, that's unrealistic to have like a cast that's all people of color, or a cast that's all queer, or a cast that's all women.
Mm-hmm.
But you see that every day, because
yeah.
I have literally one friend who is straight. mm-hmm. Like that's pretty yeah. much the only one I have. And you see mm-hmm. it all the time. You see people gather in groups. Birds of a feather flock together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%.
And now, switching to a completely separate topic, because I'm curious about this as well. So you make your podcast with Radio Laurie, obviously. I wanted to know, how do you find your guests and what draws you to them?
Ooh, yeah. It's usually just like people that I know. Mm-hmm. Usually that I know well enough to ask to be on a podcast, in the sense where like I think they like me, and so I'm like, they're not just gonna immediately say no.
That's what I do.
And I've kind of like tried some different things in the last bit. Like I've started this year trying to get, because I always get like two people every week. I tried this year an episode with just one guest. And I'm also now, I try to find people who already know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that with that, a conversation just like flows a lot better. Because my show isn't like this one where it's not like an interview. You know, it's more just like people talking for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And so I find that if there's like three strangers talking for an hour, it can just kind of like fall flat and just yeah. like stop. The conversation can just like come to a total standstill. But when I have two people who somewhat know each other already, they can keep it going and there's actual like momentum and they fall into like their normal conversation patterns. Exactly. Yeah. That kind of chemistry of like, they enjoy talking to each other and yeah, they like just can just keep it going.
Yeah. I find the same with my guests. That's kind of why I try to pick people I know well enough. And then also, as you saw earlier today, I tend to spend a couple of minutes chatting with people. Because mm-hmm. if they're not used to podcasting, or even if we just don't know each other that well, having a couple minutes to warm up and chat can really, really help it along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Have you ever had any horror guests?
Ooh, I don't think I have, no. I've had, like, guests that just the conversation kind of falls flat.
Mm.
But I haven't really had anyone that I've, like, ended the episode and been like, oh my god. I haven't had that yet, so we'll see if that happens at some point.
Fingers crossed.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm always a little bit afraid of that in the back of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Just that, because that would make a mess of editing, or just
mm-hmm.
even like if you didn't want to air the episode, having to explain to them, it'd be like, ooh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, speaking of, what kind of work goes into making an episode?
Yeah, it's not really too crazy for my show. It really just is, I always have like an outline ready, and that usually I usually have like a couple little games that I play, and then I'll have like, I usually have just like kind of funny stuff that happened to me throughout the week, or like anything going on in the world that I want to talk about. Usually just kind of like mental notes I take throughout the week of like, that was really funny, I gotta remember to tell that story on the show. And the outline is also there to just kind of like, if the convo slows down or starts to kind of fall a bit flat, I have those talking points to kind of keep it going. So I get more stuff going. And then, yeah, I have like the games in there to fill up some time. And so usually like recording's about an hour. And then, yeah, like I said earlier, there's not too much editing that goes into it. Just like maybe if there's any like technical issues, cutting those out, just kind of balancing like the audio levels is a big thing. Just making sure that it sounds good at its core. And yeah, maybe like cutting out any swear words, stuff like that, you know, just like making it like postable and really just sounding okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, you cut out your swear words. I don't. I'm a little bit, I don't know. I just leave them in. I figure everyone knows what you're saying.
That's true.
How do you run your Instagram for your podcast, if you don't mind me asking? Because I see, because I'm the laziest, I would say, out of most of the shows. I post whenever there's a new episode, but I don't do any stories. I don't do any really fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I usually will post whenever there's a new episode. I made this year, like in Canva, like a template. Just to like toss some photos in the new title, because last year I just didn't like the style of my Instagram and how it looked, and then yeah, I try to do the occasional like extra bit where maybe like if I mentioned like something in the episode, I'll post like a photo of it or a clip of it, or I'll do something like a funny poll on the story about the episode. I try to like add in the occasional extra stuff just to make it kind of funny,
to spice it up a bit.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great, because I think, because I've been using Canva too, but I don't really, I don't know, I don't tend to use the stories and stuff. I'm not huge on Instagram, but I think it's good that you create polls. I have no idea how to do that. Since we are reaching the... Well, we're already past the 50-minute mark. I'll ask you two more questions.
Ooh, fun.
The same questions I ask every time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting seeing the different answers I get from people and which ones are very similar. I should compile that information sometime. Information nobody's interested in but me. So, first question, is there anything we haven't talked about yet that you would like to talk about?
I don't know. Am I allowed to, like, promo anything?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Awesome, sweet. I am also an exec for the Laurier Musical Theater Club.
Woo!
And we have our show in January. We're doing Fame the Musical. It's pretty cool. I'm in it, actually.
Nice! Hey,
go check that out. And yeah, I guess just, that's what I'll talk about. I guess just with that, I think that theater is also a pretty fun medium. When it's done well, I think it's very easy to do theater totally wrong and just make a totally unhealthy environment. And as someone who kind of started in an unhealthy environment, it can really just leave like a sour taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
And yeah, but now I'm in very good theater environments, and it's much, much, much more fun. Yeah.
So what show are you in?
Fame the Musical.
Oh, I've never heard of that one.
Yeah, pretty cool. It's like an old movie, and then they kind of turned it into an actual stage musical.
Something I think that you guys should do is The Guy Who Didn't Like Musicals.
Oh, I've heard about that one.
You should absolutely watch it. It is hilarious. I think it would be great for... university level, although it's kind of inappropriate. And my last question for you, is there anything you'd like to say to any other creators out there? Maybe someone who's trying to get into film, maybe someone who's trying to get over like a I don't know, a creative block or something.
Mm-hmm. I think just like create, you know, don't let barriers get in the way of you doing what you want to do. I'm very much just like, just like do what you want to do in life. Just have fun, have a good time. Like if you can't edit like I can, then write and make some ideas. If you don't think you have the equipment to do stuff, find a way to do it. You can make a film on an $80,000 cinema camera or like a GoPro. Like you can do whatever you want in life and just totally bend the rules of art. And so, yeah, I guess it's a long and convoluted way to just say, do what you want to do. And if you want to create, make some stuff.
Oh, I think that's a really nice message.
Oh, thank you.
And then also, yeah, you're right. You can do pretty much like for writing, you could write on literally anything. Yesterday, I had an in-person meeting with my writing group. Someone wrote on the back of a paper plate. Like, there's nothing. Well, I mean, unless you don't have a pencil, but like, I'm sure there's something you could like squish, you could figure it out. Yeah. Use your blood, squish some berries. Yeah, you could, exactly. You could figure it out. You could use your phone for videos or even for podcasting. Mm-hmm. You don't.
Yes.
There's so many ways to do art. It's incredible. And if you ever need tutorials, you can find things online. So
yeah.
Yeah. Seconding what Jack said. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me. This has been very enlightening. I've learned so much about film.
It was fun.
Yeah. So this has been another episode of In the Margins. If you like our show, check us out at RadioLaurie.com or our Instagram page at In the Margins Podcast for more episodes. And if you want to check out what Jack's doing, find him on Instagram at the WLU No Show. So that's WLUNOSHOW on Instagram or at RadioLaurie.com. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.